listening to The Cooler Ring, a podcast made for manufacturing marketers. Here are Carmen Perry and Jeff White.
Welcome to The Cooler Ring, a podcast for manufacturing marketers brought to you by Cooler Partners. My name is Jeff White, and joining me today is Carmen Perry. Carmen, how are you doing, sir?
I am excited to be here.
Yeah, me as well.
Yeah, it's not every time that, like, I like when we, I mean, look, every episode is amazing. I love all of our guests. We don't want to be rude.
But no, we're not picking. You can't pick favorites.
No. But I love when we talk about something that's just completely kind of zigs while everybody else is zagging, or is this not something kind of it's often thought about in the space, which I think is a good way to characterize today's conversation.
For sure. And I don't want to give too many tips away about it. I think we'll just dive right into it. So joining us today is Herbert Staten Jr. Herbert is the marketing director at MBC Aerosol Filling Machinery. Welcome to The Cooler Ring, Herbert.
Well, thank you. Thank you for having me. Excited about the, you know, started to kind of discuss what I love doing, marketing and making machines look pretty so people can buy them. So it's, you know, kind of excited to talk about it and kind of share my my vision for, you know, when I joined MBC and, you know, where we're going now.
Yeah, it's awesome to have you with us. Let's introduce our listeners first to MBC a bit. Tell us about the firm and how you ended up there.
MBC Aerosol is a custom design aerosol filling machines. So everything from, you know, we make the machines that fill up, you know, deodorants, air sprays, pesticides, you know, sunscreen. Our machines actually help fill those cans and put those products inside the can that you use every day. A lot of people use and kind of don't really, you know the history behind how it gets there.
It's kind of one of those invisible things that everybody, you probably go through it and use, probably everybody listening to this podcast has interacted indirectly with a product that you market.
Oh, definitely. If they put on deodorant this morning, they're, you know, they've used something we've actually filled probably.
So we hope you have at least interacted with it.
Yeah, exactly.
How long's the company been around, Herbert?
Company's been around right now, I think it's 15 years now.
Okay.
So, yeah, so we've recently been we're under a new company now, one of our company that actually purchased us and kind of giving us some more money to invest into innovation and things like that. So RB Industries has, you know, brought us under their umbrella of other manufacturing companies that they own just recently. So it's probably last year or so.
Very cool.
Yeah. So it's been a good journey, though. Good transition.
I was half asking that question because I wanted to know if they had been around when the whole ozone and CFC propellant debate was going on and the world kind of came together and solved that one.
Yeah, and that debate still goes on.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, that debate still goes on. I remember when I started NBC, people were still talking about it. And so I ended up, like, I wrote a couple of blogs about it just to kind of dispel the myth of what it actually is so people got to understand. It was actually pretty good. Got a lot of traction, too, so it's good. So a lot of people are interested in it.
Interesting. I remember when that was such a selling feature as some organizations moved towards, you know, non-CFC aerosols or whatever it was. I don't even remember. Like, was that 20 years ago? Was it 30? I can't recall.
Yeah, you're dating yourself now, Jeff.
For sure. It was a while ago. I mean, it's been going up. And people still bring it up now. Did I mean, I'll really? Go to a show and people, we're at shows, you know, people, hey, what about this? Here, I gave him a link to the blog. Here you go, read that.
Yeah, the ozone's fine. Everything else is screwed, though, so.
Yeah, exactly. No, we're good, yeah. I mean, there's other technologies that are, you know, that are coming aboard, too. I mean, we do bag-on-valve, which is another technology used alongside aerosol, so.
Herbert, you said in kind of introducing yourself and as we kicked off the show here, you said, you know, make stuff look good so people will buy it. And, you know, that's really the topic of today's show, this notion of, you know, marketing machines through beauty and, you know, industrial machinery through beauty. And that is not something you hear about every day.
No, I think it's overlooked. I remember coming in, you know, coming aboard NBC and talking to the owner, Jim, and I was like, you know, I walk into the shop and I'm like, wow, these machines are, I mean, they're immaculate. You know, just the way they look, they're very impressive in the details and the engineering. And I was like, why don't we showcase that? You know, why don't we make that a feature? I mean, because there are some, you know, there are some industries like, you know, for example, cosmetics. I mean, they're gonna have they want their showroom to look great. So, in most cases, so you know, so having a machine that's aesthetically pleasing to the eye and kind of and is definitely a workhorse is that's a plus.
Tell our audience a bit about your background, because obviously, you know, how you've come to this is part of what has allowed you to recognize, you know, a previously unseen beauty.
So yeah, so my background, I actually have a degree in computer science. So that's kind of, so that's where the analytics side comes from as far as the marketing. And then I progressed and I have a background, you know, I've studied photography and cinematography. So I've done like short films, commercials, and a lot of promotional stuff for other brands and other companies. So that gave me that insight and that vision to what, you know, what the machine could be and what it could look like. So when I light everything and, you know, give it that look that, you know, cinematic look that everybody looks for and find those details in the machine that are going to be interesting to the audience and the people that are watching.
When you first brought this up, did they look at you like a dog watching TV? Like, what is Herbert talking about?
No, you know what? I did. I remember meeting with them and I was like, and I saw some past videos or saw some other literature. And I'm like, how come the machine is not lit from the inside? How come you're not lighting the machine? So it actually shows those details. So, I mean, they were very, and then once they saw some of the videos, they're like, okay, wow. Okay. Now I see. I mean, I think, you know, the owners that built NBC, they knew that their machines had an aesthetic look that was very, you know, pleasing. So, it was just having somebody come in and kind of showcase. So they didn't fight it. They knew. They already had an idea that their machines, you know, were very well engineered and looked good. So, yeah. So it wasn't a fight.
Interesting. And do you find, you know, as you kind of, and I understand it's a very niche category, but you do have competitors, I'm sure. Is there a big, do you see them, you know, maybe trying to catch up or mimic you in any way, or?
It's funny you say that. Yeah. Yeah, I've been watching some of our competitors and watching some of the things they do, and yes, they have started mimicking or paying attention and saying, "Hey, wait a minute, you know, we can showcase our machines as well." So yeah, it happened, which is, you know, I'm like, okay, that's great, you understand that now. So I don't take offense to that. I'm like, hey, okay, that's, you know, it's kind of what's that saying about imitation is. So that's kind of good.
Yeah, it's a good form of flattery. There's no question. And but one assumes maybe their machines aren't quite as beautiful either.
I won't say that. I'll keep that to myself.
It's really interesting. I mean, I don't think I'm telling tales out of school now. I think we're well outside of NDAs in the early days of our life as an agency here. We did some work marketing a fish pump. That was painted British Racing Green. It's a, you know, very industrial. It's a fish pump that, you know, sits on a very hard-working fishing boat. And, you know, I think a lot of people would have looked at that and said, why are you spending the extra money to finish the machine in that high-grade way and spending all that money on that most expensive color of paint that you can find? And then they ended up getting featured on a reality TV show, I think largely because their pump was beautiful. Like, so, Deadliest Catch, correct, Jeff?
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, yeah. And so, you know, they had their fish pump on that boat. And I don't think that was, you know, entirely by mistake, right?
Yeah, yeah. No, not at all. Not at all. I mean, that's they figured out that, hey, my brand is going to stand out. No matter what, you're gonna know what that green, you know, when that color pops up, you're gonna know exactly what it is and who it is.
Do you find? I mean, I know that you need both the steak and the sizzle here. You can't ignore the fact of talking about the the performance of the equipment and the specifications. But has your approach to highlighting the beauty extended at all towards? You know, maybe a less of an emphasis on some of that, or, you know, have you noticed that, like, an emphasis on beauty actually extends to the copy, extends to how you talk about the machine, other than just how you show it?
That's interesting. Yeah, I definitely balance it out where, you know, talking about, I mean, because that's the reliability of our machines is what, you know, is what has got it to this point where we have a reputation that, you know, we're a great machine that works and works hard and fuels products and, you know, gives our consumers what they need. So I focus on that, but I balance those two out to make sure that, you know, we still talk about performance, but it definitely, I think the engineering, working alongside engineering, they understand that we do have a look, then we kind of continue to portray that look as we keep designing and innovating.
I guess shifting gears here, now I'm bouncing all over the place, but, you know, in thinking about the highlighting the aesthetic of the machine, has it resulted in engineering putting any more of an emphasis on how the machinery looks? Like, have they made different decisions knowing that the beauty of the machine is going to be highlighted more?
Oh, yeah, definitely. Our engineering team is very keen on, you know, our brand right now, and they understand that when they design or put a certain innovation or some type of new type of filler or new type of crimper or something like that in there, it has to have a look that stands out. And it has to be functional. It's going to be, you know, a great piece of equipment. So yeah, they definitely pay attention to that. Yeah. There's no they wouldn't like throw something in the middle. You're like, what is that? Why are you putting that there? That doesn't look good.
Yeah, you're good.
Why is it not stainless steel? So,
yeah, it's one of the striking things about the machinery, actually, is that the all stainless, at least some of the ones I've seen on.
Yeah, we're all stainless steel for a reason. It just doesn't corrode. It lasts a long time. And I mean, I've seen some machines inside of shops at some of our customers. They take a beating, but they still look good. Mm. So that's because they don't corrode. So. Because of the all stainless steel, so that is definitely one of our advantages. Yeah, it ups the price a little bit, but it's worth it in the long run.
You mentioned a moment ago about how the aesthetic of the machines is part of the brand and all of that at MBC. Before you joined on, they didn't really have an internal marketing department, and you've sort of brought this the aesthetic argument and helping highlight that. How else have you kind of tried to bring that brand to life as you've begun to build a marketing strategy for MBC?
Yeah, I think just helping, you know, as a storyteller, you know, and a filmmaker, I wanted to really come in and emphasize like why we do what we do, you know, why we build the machines the way we build them. And there was no marketing department before I started, so. There was marketing done. So I came in and really put some structure into kind of how we're going to, reach the customer, you know, redesign the website, you know, using social media to really tell those stories on how we build and why we do what we do. And, it's definitely, shown in, some of the responses from customers as far as understanding. Now they're like, oh, okay, now I know why you guys do that. Or, you know, wow, that's a great innovation. Or, you know, so definitely has helped, and that's kind of the direction I took as far as building up the brand to this point.
When you talk about the storytelling of the brand and the why you build it the way you do, I mean, fundamentally, I feel like there's kind of two different ways people can go about that. They can kind of go from a bit of the inside out, like this is our driving passion, these are the people that build this equipment, and this is why we do it. Or they kind of go from the outside in and they more highlight customers, clients, and say, and the problems that they're solving there and kind of maybe shine a bit more of the people focus, external versus internal. Have you chosen one or the other? And if so, why?
Yeah, I think ours is external. I mean, we've had some companies that that went from one machine, one small lab machine, to now they have a full warehouse of machines. And that's just, you know, that's kind of our, that's kind of our DNA, is to come alongside our customers and really kind of grow with them and help them innovate. Say they have a new can or something like that they need. And that's why we're kind of a custom designer. If they have a new can or a new brand, and somebody's coming to them, or they have a new company, a new can or product. And it's like, it's up to us to kind of help them to bring that can to, you know, to the consumer and kind of be able to fill that can. So, yeah, so it is, I think it's rewarding when I go out and see, you know, people growing, you know, some of our customers growing in there. They're getting another machine. They're like, wow, okay, we have a whole new line of a product we're going to put on this machine and what that machine is. And they're excited about it. So, yes, ours is very customer, you know, customer driven as far as why we do what we do. Yeah, so it's, you know, I think that's why we've been around so long.
One of the things that you've mentioned to us in our conversation before we started recording the podcast was that, you know, in these, you're operating in an incredibly niche space, you know, but you mentioned too that you're also kind of, and I think it's evident in what you've brought to MBC from the product standpoint in terms of how you're showcasing it and all that. But one of the things you've mentioned is that you really are kind of looking at what are the trends that are out there right now in marketing and kind of bringing things maybe from a non-industrial space to the sort of things that you're marketing. What are you seeing and what are you looking for there? And what do you feel you've taken advantage of?
Yeah, I think coming from outside, I was, you know, kind of doing marketing for, you know, B2C. B2B is totally different. They're more conscious on the price and, you know, how what ROI I'm going to get back on this product or this, you know, machine that I'm buying. So I think thinking outside the box and looking at how B2C markets, right? You know, kind of taking a little bit of that and just taking some risk and, you know, I'm taking some risk on social media, putting some stuff out that's either humorous or, you know, kind of seeing where it's going to, how people are going to, you know, gauge it and interact with it and engage. So, you know, yeah, I think outside the box a lot. So like, sometimes I have to question what I'm about. I'm like, okay, I don't think I need to post that. I run some stuff by the team and like, do we think we should go with this? And they're like, nah, let's not do that one. so you know, they could get us in trouble. But yeah, you know, I like thinking outside the box. I like keeping it innovative. You know, even ads and print ads and, you know, we still do a lot of print ads. Just, you know, being kind of, you know, I'm inspired by car, you know, car ads a lot. It's very emotional. It's very emotional the way they build a car, you know, and then they kind of create this environment around that car. You look at Formula One. I think I saw a documentary on Formula One and how they're and some of the teams and how they have the cars sitting in the lobby. They have like all these cars that they've driven, like sitting in the lobby, like a museum. It's like, wow, that's, but it gives a certain mystique when you walk into that, you know, you walk into that office, you're like, wow, this is what they built. It's just cars. They all look the same. They all make the same model type, but the different colors and the, you know, the story behind each one but it gives you a different feeling. So you kind of embrace it. You're like, all right. So that's kind of what I guess what inspires me is, you know, I definitely look at a lot of way cars are marketed and you know, just showcased.
Have you done, I know with a lot of the manufacturers that we work with, that factory tour is sort of the last step usually before a purchase is made, you know, or sometimes I guess it could be, you know, even earlier in the process, but are you working within MBC to create kind of, you know, any internal storytelling at the plant, or are people coming to see that?
Yes. Yeah. Yeah, definitely. I remember the first day there and I walked through the facility and I'm like, how can we have no pictures of the machines on the wall? Like, people walk in and there's nothing here. So that was kind of my first, like, hey, okay, we're going to get some large, you know, 24 by 36 prints on the wall of each machine and details. And yeah, definitely. So so that was probably one of the things, the first things I initiated because, yeah, there was nothing that told that story when you walk into the factory. So now it's definitely, you know, people like, oh, okay, wow. Even like new employees coming in or new builders are like, hey, wow, that's great. I built that machine, or, you know.
It has to be a source of pride for existing employees, yeah?
Yeah, exactly. So, but yeah, it definitely gives you that feel when, you know, all the pictures in the conference rooms and, you know, so it gives people a feel when they come in like, okay, you know, it's a conversation piece as well.
Herbert, I want to go back to that comment that you made about B2C versus B2B and kind of taking some risks, and particularly in social. And kind of reflecting on that a little bit, I guess I'm curious. Do we? I think I can make the argument in either direction. Like I can make the argument, I think that B2B is actually more risk loving. Like that there's more tolerance for certain types of potentially off-color humor than there might be in more B2C environments where you're. And I could probably make the argument in the reverse. What has been your experience?
Yeah, man, I would say that I think I look at there's some brands out there that are definitely taking a lot of swings, you know, like Liquid Death or they're taking, you know, but they're B2C. So they take those swings and it works for them. It works for their brand. That's who their brand is. So I think, you know, with machines, you have to kind of, I want to say conservatively look at it, but I think, kind of stay within your brand and who you're representing, who your consumers are. Otherwise you kind of lose them in a sense. So you could be on that edge a little bit, but then kind of come back. I mean, you know, when I came in, I mean, I was like, hey, we're going to get on every platform, but we're on every platform, even Pinterest. So Pinterest, TikTok. So we have TikTok videos that have a lot of views, just some quirky engineering type stuff that I didn't actually expect it to kind of go viral, but it actually did. And I was like, wow, okay. But it's a platform that actually we're just showcasing the brand. I mean, I just use each platform for what it is. I use social for what it is. It's a net to bring everybody back to the website and to have a conversation about NBC.
You just mentioned how the TikTok success surprised you. Would you say that's been your most surprising execution thus far? And if not, what was?
No, I've had some, we've done some blogs that have definitely had some great, great engagement. The TikTok one, yeah, it was because it was kind of a video. I was like, I had just kind of started the platform, you know, kind of signed us up for the platform. And I was like, hey, okay, do a couple of videos here. Let's see what happens. I was playing around. I'll test a lot to see what works and what doesn't work. And I found that people are very interested in the mechanical side of what we do and what we're testing. You know, so they want to see the quirky stuff that the general public won't see. so they're interested in that. You know, taking cardboard to redirect some valves or something like that. I think you just find what works on each platform, and that's what I've done. Even Instagram is great. I mean, you know, like, I don't know if each platform has its own audience, its own little quirk, and you just find what works. And once I find what works, hey, I just keep, just keep creating that same thing
until Congress shuts it down.
Yeah, until Congress shuts it down. Well, that's the great thing about all these platforms, right? You shut down one, you just keep, just move on. You don't focus on one.
That's interesting. Who do you, do you find that there's a specific kind of grouping of potential customers for your machines in different places, in different pieces of social media? And does that impact what you create for those?
Yes. Yes, it does. Yeah. On Instagram, I would find that a lot of the medical pharmaceutical audience on there that will engage with some of the machines that we build that are for pharmaceutical and the MDI world, the meter dose inhaler world. And then on LinkedIn, you know, it's kind of a traditional aerosol bag on valve type of audience that I'll find there. So yeah, each audience has its own, I find on each platform there is something. Twitter is more informational, just kind of like, you know, or X, whatever you want to call it now.
Yeah. I refuse to call it X, too. I'm with you.
Yeah, I know. Whatever. Yeah, it's still Twitter.
That's fascinating that you found a bit of vertical differentiation as well in platforms. That's really cool.
Yeah, it's a lot. Yeah, I think. And then, like I said, Twitter's more informational. You know, you'll have something that people. And I pay attention a lot to the way. I don't know if you ever looked at how clickbait works on, like, Facebook or just on websites in general. And I pay attention to that because it's very emotional. So I try to drive the audience based on clickbait type of headings on Twitter. And it works. So.
Herbert, as our time is drawing to a close, I wonder if you have any kind of parting advice for people maybe people that have had experience in marketing but are jumping into the industrial B2B space for the first time? What's your parting words?
Yeah, I would say just get a real good grasp on envision of where you want your brand to go, where you want it to go. Don't limit yourself based on what others are doing. They think outside the box and just create and have fun with it. I think it's taken too seriously at times, especially within the B2B space and manufacturing. It's taken too seriously. Enjoy it. We are marketing. Create. Be creative and just create things that are, that are outside the box, and that'll appeal to people when they see it.
Make things beautiful so people buy them.
Exactly. Make things beautiful so they buy it. Exactly.
Herbert, it's been a pleasure having you on the show. Thank you so much.
No, thank you. Thank you for having me.
Cheers. Thanks a lot.
Thanks for listening to The Cooler Ring with Carmen Perry and Jeff White. Don't miss a single manufacturing marketing insight. Subscribe now at kulapartners.com/thecoolerring. That's KULA partners.com/thecoolerring.